Automotive Mayhem with the real car guy, master technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car and car repair. I've got my sidekick next to me, Renee. That's my wife. I have to be on my best behavior because you're here.
Oh, that hasn't stopped you before.
Okay, fine. Nevertheless, now's the time to get in, 602-508-0960. And Gil, if you can hear me, and I know you can you bump up your input to me? And if you can't, it's no big deal. Just, I don't know if that's going to be on a pod or not, but if you can bring it up to me in my headphones, then that'd be great. But if you can't, it's okay, because Renee and I can make it.
Yep.
All righty. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by S&S Tire, my friends at S&S Tire. They opened in 1976. They have three locations in the West Valley, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. S&S offers a comprehensive line of tires and many different brands. You can go in there and you can say to them, I want good, better, best. I want an estimate for 4 tires, and I want to write the check before I leave to come here. I want you to give me a couple of tires in each category. So you walk away with basically 6 estimates, but really you just need 3. Good, better, best, and the brands, and you can make up your mind. Doesn't cost you anything. They're really, really good. So they have tires from wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. So they'll balance your tires. They do alignments and suspension work. So they're going to be able to read your old ones and then make sure that they give you an estimate to repair any abnormal wear for your new tires. And that's the best of two worlds. You get to see the old ones, and then you get to do the repair. Many times, guys like me, in the independent car repair market, we see the car with new tires on it, and we don't really have the benefit of reading the old tires. So they can do both at the same time. All righty. Let's go to my list of things that have wadded up my underwear.
Oh, my gosh. It doesn't take much some days.
First of all, there's a nice gentleman that wrote me a note. He has a 6-year-old car with 17,000 miles on it. It's in the garage, city driving, about 2,000 miles a year. Does he get rid of his tires?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
Not at 6 years.
That's what I told him.
Yeah.
I said he needs to start looking hard at his tires when they're 8, 9, and 10. Right now, the top limit appears to be the majority of the experts in the United States say 10 years. Discount Tire says we won't even touch your tires when they're 10 years or north of that. Mm-hmm. But he also said it's in the garage. And I said to him, that's not important.
That's not important?
No, that's not important. And the reason why is if they're hanging on a shelf in a hot warehouse or they're in your garage on a hot floor, that really doesn't make any difference. What deteriorates the tire is wear. So we spin at 75, and in your case, not 100 miles an hour, and the tire gets hot, and then we go through heat cycles, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. But the idea that if I shade my tires and they never see sun, and if I store it inside, the tires will love me, and instead of 10 years, I can go 20 years, that's typically the mentality, and that's not true.
Okay.
So you have to draw that hard line.
But, I mean, they don't get sun cracked or weather cracked or anything either. So that's kind of why I thought for in the garage, and maybe I'm like everybody else.
Well,
that's
no,
not right.
No, there's a valid point to that. Weather checking is an issue, but there's no standards to look at a tire and either bless the tire or mm-hmm. kick it out of your bubble. So you can, even the most sophisticated, but I will tell you this, when the crack is so big that you can see the next layer mm-hmm. of tread,
yeah.
or not tread, but layer of nylon or layer of polyester, that's a bad deal.
Sure.
But in reality, that tire is long past the 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we still see that, but those tires are 12 and 15 years old.
Sure.
So this weather checking idea, and then there's nothing you can put on your tire to make it love you or not weather check.
Right.
So people, they park their motorhomes on wood and they cover up their tires. In reality, that motorhome tire should be replaced between 5 and 7 years, and all that wood and all those covers doesn't mean nothing. Okay. Guy washes his engine, and after he washes his engine, he has throttle and performance issues. Any idea what that is?
No, but okay. I think you talked about this, didn't you?
What do you think? What do you think it was, or why did I?
I don't know. I think you just told the story about. Is this about that case you had?
No.
This is a different
thing. That was the diesel engine.
Okay. Oh, this is a gas engine.
This is a gas engine. He washes his gas engine at the car wash, and now it runs bad. The throttle position sensor, TPS.
Okay.
You can't get it wet.
Okay.
He got it wet. Then I called him this morning, 3 days later, and I said to him, hey, is it better, worse, or the same? And he goes, it's back to normal. And I said, you dodged a bullet. Because you went through some heat cycles. The engine compartment got over 212. We kind of boiled a lot of that water out of there, and we cleaned up the switch. So you're one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
Most other people, their throttle position sensor does not recover. But I said, you know, you did okay.
Where is that located?
It's on the throttle blades. Now, you would follow the throttle cable to one side of the mouth of the motor, where the motor breathes.
Okay.
On the opposite side of the mouth, and picture a big round piece, it's every bit as big as the bigger cans of whatever.
Soup or vegetables?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say?
Of tomato can. It's kind of a tomato can as opposed to a small can of soup.
Okay.
So that's the mouth of the motor where it breathes, and there's some butterflies in there. So on one side is the throttle cable. Almost always on the other side is this electronic device that's plugged in that tells the computer where the hell your foot's at.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So if it's at idle or wide open throttle. All right.
So you don't want to get that wet.
You don't want to get that wet.
All right.
I had a guy write in on an 01 diesel. It shifts up and down a lot. And so I sent him up to ANS Transmission. And Alger did some, as you should, he did some basic and fundamental, let's see what the computer says, let's see what kind of codes they have in it, and let me perform some function tests. Let me make it happen and make it not happen, and he drove it. So he ended up fixing the car. I'm guessing the bill was $100, $150, somewhere around there. You know what he did to fix it?
What?
He moved the alternator wire harness.
Wow.
So the alternator wire harness has lots of room in it, so it's over here, and now he's going to move it 6 or 8 inches over here, and he just used plastic ties to tie it away. He determined that the electrolysis, the wire has a field around it, and the alternator is a big electrical consumer and provider.
Generator, yeah.
So there's lots of stuff going on there. So he moves it away. How much talent, how much experience take to figure that out?
Yeah. Sometimes people don't realize that that's what it is. It's just experience.
Tom is your first caller, Tom.
So.
And it isn't going to happen. You're going to find that in a YouTube. Okay.
No.
So then he gets a second car, and the car, this diesel truck, Dodge diesel truck's driving down the road. And intermittently, it goes out of overdrive to like third gear. So it's like shifting from sixth gear to third gear. Boom.
Yeah.
And then it goes on and off, on and off, on and off. I'm a little bit mad because he didn't tell me the whole story.
Oh, he didn't?
No. And I now know this whole story.
Oh, boy.
So he takes the car in to a transmission shop, and the transmission shop finds out that the 5-volt reference to this sensor that says the transmission is overheating is going crazy. The 5-volt sensor, the wire, goes from 2 volts to 5 volts, 2 volts to 5 volts, and it bounces back and forth. So he goes upstream and he finds a bad connector. So he fixes the connector. But there's so much more to the story.
Is this the customer fixes it or Alger?
Alger.
Okay.
Alger built that transmission for the customer. It was a carryout.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he then takes it to a shop of his own and has him install it. Now there's 3 people involved in this transmission. So now it doesn't shift.
Oh, boy.
Actually, what's happening is something is lying to the computer and telling the computer that the transmission is overheating. So then the computer, its programming says, well, let me go from 6th gear to 3rd gear and let's speed up the fluid flow. Let's do something different. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, Alger rebuilds it. Guy takes it out in the bed of his truck. He takes it to his shop. That guy installs it. And now we have this problem.
Oh,
and it's real intermittent. And it's seasonal. So he doesn't tell me that.
Yeah, we hate those kind of problems.
Well, he doesn't. I need the rest of the story. So Alger calls me and says, you want to know the real story behind this? And he tells me. And he says, there's 3 of us involved. And those 2 have decided it's my fault.
Oh, boy.
And I said, did you fix it? That's the most important question. He says, yes. And I said, did it have anything to do with the transmission you rebuilt? And he said, bad words.
I bet.
And I said, so what are you going to do? And he says, I've had a talk with the shop, and we're going to work it out between the two of us. But he says, you need to know there's a lot more to this story than what you were told. And this really, what's the word I'm looking for? This really demonstrates when you do that what kind of a risk you're going to have. There was no reason for that second shop to be involved in this, and there was no reason for Alger to be involved in this once the problem was fixed.
Right.
Everybody knew that neither one of those guys should have pulled money out of their pockets. Mm-hmm. But in reality, Alger ended up fixing it, so he took a beating, and the guy that installed it took a beating, and the customer's over there going, nah, 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 nah. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Yeah. Tom, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Hey, I got a toothpaste.
I missed you there. You got a 2000?
2003 Toyota Tacoma. It has 220,000 miles on it. I took it in to get the yearly vehicle inspection or every other year inspection.
Emissions.
And they said the computer is not ready.
Okay. Did you disconnect the battery cable to try to clear a code before you went down there?
No, because I didn't know it wasn't ready. There was nothing telling me because it runs perfect. I mean, it really does.
Okay.
And
that has nothing
go ahead,
to do
I'm
with
sorry.
It. That's okay. That has nothing to do with it. Let me explain. What happens is, or what used to happen is that people would disconnect the battery because they had a check engine light, and typically it would take 3 or 4 days for the check engine light to raise its ugly head again. So they would disconnect the battery and they'd shoot through emissions. And they would actually beat the system. So now the computers now have
monitor ready.
A ready monitor. Mm-hmm. And the monitor says, before I'm going to say I'm okay, I need to see this specific drive cycle. Now, the drive cycle, and I'm making fun of it, Tom. The drive cycle is 7.5 minutes at 20 miles an hour, then go 5 miles an hour for 3 minutes, and then make a quick stop, then make a right turn, honk your horn, wave a dead chicken around your head, turn on your wiper blades. It's that silly. But it takes a normal person a week to 2 weeks to accommodate all those glasses that need to be filled. So what they're telling you is that one of the monitors says, I'm not ready. So what you have to do is you have to go in and have somebody check which monitor is not ready. Evaporative system, tailpipe emissions, fuel delivery, timing, there's all kinds of things. But in your case, it's going to be an O2 sensor monitor. So you're going to have to address that, and then the shop's going to have to guarantee their repairs. Then you're going to drive it for a week or two. And then they're going to go back to the shop and say, is the monitor ready? And they say yes. And then you go through emissions. They plug in and you're out the door. That's the process that you're probably going to go through.
Wow. Okay. Is there anybody that's really good at doing something like that?
On a 1 to 10 scale, this is about a 6 for just about every shop in town. Now, this is independent repair shops. This is not the chain stores, not the transmission shops that have decided to get into repair, not the brake shops that have decided to get into repair. For them, it's a 10. Okay? That's like me going from auto mechanics to birthing babies. I mean, I'm not going to be good at birthing babies, at least for the not 10 years. So, what part of town do you live in?
Glendale.
Okay.
By Arrowhead.
Okay.
Probably Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, yes. Thunderbird. Thunderbird Auto. Go to MarkSalem.com, which is my website. Click on Best Car Repair Shops. If you don't have a shop, I can guarantee you Tom Fletcher at Thunderbird Auto can find and fix your problem.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you very much for calling. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You either call in and ask me a car question, or I continue to rant. And I want to talk about ladies' leg. What's
stop.
It called?
I'm not going to tell
no,
you.
No, what is it? Come on.
Shaving cream?
Yes.
Oh.
Because I had quite a few emails about that.
Okay.
Folks, the answer to the question on the other side of the break is Mark was taking a shower the other day and happened to use Renee's leg shaving cream. And so I'll tell you how that turned out. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 22 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. The lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're more than welcome to join us. If you have a car question or a car problem or a car dilemma, then I think I can probably help you with that. Last hour, or last segment, we were talking, we ended the segment about Mark went into the shower and didn't have any shaving cream.
Yeah.
And I used your leg shaving cream.
Yes.
And it was... I said last week it was unbelievably better than what I was using.
Us and girls know what to use. Come on.
And that might be fine. And mine was a gel. And yours is a gel.
Yeah.
It's just completely different. Now, one of the guys that wrote in said, well, how long had you been in the shower before you used hers, thinking that the heat and the water would soften my beard?
Yeah.
And I said to him, I shave first thing. I get in, wet my hair, wet my face, put on my thing and shave. And he says, well, I just wondered. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, fair enough. So one guy writes in, and this is what he writes in. He says, George, he says, my neighbor used to go to the dollar store and buy the ladies' shavers. They have an adjustable blade on them, so they may go deep and then short. And he says they last a long time and they're cheaper than anything else. So, Father's Day's right around the corner.
Oh, okay. That's okay? What you want?
I think that that's what ladies should get their fathers. And now the shaving cream is called Skintimate. Skintimate. And what that means is it's two words, but they both share the I-N. Skin, intimate.
Yeah, skin, but I mean it's all one word.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Skintimate.
Yes.
But they can think of it as two words. Skin, intimate.
Okay.
Because, like I say, there's a shared two letters there.
We wouldn't want them to get it wrong.
You can't very well. You have to be.
Oh my goodness!
Knock it off. You have to be specific if you're going to talk. And then they're not paying me to do this product for them.
I know.
And then the dollar store.
Uh huh.
Is there a dollar store up here?
There sure is.
We're going out after the show.
Okay.
I want to see these razors.
That's right.
So I'm going to buy like a 10 pack of these razors. I'm going to continue to use your leg shaving stuff, and I'm going to report to see. And I don't have, on a 1 to 10 scale, my beard's not a 10. I mean, we got people in our family that it takes a chainsaw to give them a shave.
Okay.
But I'm a 6. My beard's probably a 6 or a 7.
Okay. Well, you're giving them way too much information about
it. You know what? This is what it's all about. There's things that are not on my list of things.
Portion brought to you by
Brian is your next.
Oh, you want that?
Yeah. Oh. I wonder if they know that you're promoting shaving, women shaving stuff.
Well, Tom at Action Auto would think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Tom at Action Auto is at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a full service family owned operation. He's been around since 1983. I've known him since 1979. He's a great guy. So no matter what you've got, Tom and his staff are known for quality workmanship, excellent customer service, and a fast turnaround time. And he has ASE master technicians, which means that they've got gray hair. That means that they've been around the block, and that means someone has tested them at a national level and certified them completely qualified to work on your car from the front bumper to the back bumper, as opposed to someone who's never had ASE certification, who says he's a technician and worked at a quick lube shop for 3 months. So nevertheless, I-17 in Deer Valley, Action Auto. Now, who was the caller?
Oh, I
Brian.
Did. Brian. Brian, good morning to you. You want to talk about leg shaving or car problems?
Well, I think we'll stick with the pickup I got.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. 3 weeks ago, we spoke about my 03 GMC Sonoma, and if you remember, I was getting a thump noise when I would walk away from the vehicle about 30 seconds to a minute.
Yeah, I guessed that it was a blend or something like that.
Well, you suggested one thing to try would be to, when I'm coming back from the store or whatnot, take the gas cap off and drive it. Well, I drove it about a half mile back home from the grocery store the other day, and I did not get that noise after 4 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes of sitting there waiting for it. So I wondered if that gave you any kind of a clue what might be going on there.
Well, I need the other part of your testing. I need you to put the gas cap back on and make sure that this problem comes back. If that's the case.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Then you accomplish the goal. The cheapest and easiest and the most inexpensive way is go replace the cap, and I would suggest that you buy a Stant cap, S-T-A-N-T.
Okay.
I would get it specifically for your Sonoma, and I'd put that on there. You can save your old one if you want, but if it's an 03 and it's got the original cap, it probably needs one anyway. The question is are we venting the fuel tank after we shut the car off? And the gas cap is part of that process, but your evaporative system that sucks the fumes off your engine, runs them through a charcoal canister and burns them through the engine again, that is also not, it's kind of like a straw that you suck on and then you stick your tongue over the end of the straw. The vacuum is still there. If something in your evaporative system is not releasing the vacuum from the tank, then you're going to have that metal popping noise back at the tank. Another thing too is you need to put your hand, you need to kind of lay down behind the truck and put your hand on the bottom of that fuel tank and wait that 4 minutes, because if there's something going on in that fuel tank, whether it's either expanding or contracting, and I think it's contracted and it's expanding, you're going to be able to feel it with your hands. So the gas cap is still my first choice. The second choice is you're going to have somebody look at the evaporative system to make sure when you shut it off that it's dumping the pressure inside or the vacuum inside the tank. That's what's going to have to happen.
Okay.
All righty.
Can you tell me, I don't know if you know where the canister is located on that vehicle, with memory serve or not?
Well, I'm going to guess it's up behind one of the headlights. It's a round canister. It's going to have three, maybe four hoses on the top of it. And it's going to be held on by a real cheesy clamp. And but I'm not sure. You can also you have a fuel injected unit on that 03, right?
Yes, sir.
A throttle body. There may be a big hose come off the throttle body that goes to the canister. It's going to be a vacuum line looking. It's not going to be a high-pressure fuel line. It's going to be a vacuum line, a 3/8, probably something like that. That might take you to the canister. Or there might be one of those larger hoses underneath the throttle body unit, and one of them is going to go to the PCV valve, but I'm pretty sure the other goes to the canister.
Okay, that'll help me out.
All right.
And when you replace the canister, is there such a thing as replacing the valve on top of it or just the whole canister?
It comes as a complete unit. But that's not your...
Okay.
I don't want you to guess on this because...
No, I'm not going to. It's going to go to Kurtz Auto because I'm half mile from this facility, but I'm just curious myself before I get there.
Yeah. What you could do, too, is you could pull... you have the motor running and pull one of the lines on the canister, and under the best of condition, that line doesn't have a vacuum to it. Okay? There's going to be other ones. There's some in and there's some out. Pull one of the lines and, again, park the car and see what happens. The more information you give Kurt, the less your diagnostic charge is going to be. So I take the gas cap off and it never thumps. I put the gas cap back on and it thumps. I change the gas cap. It still thumps. I pulled this line. It stopped thumping. Boom, then Jeff and Eric are going to be able to figure this out really quick. So,
okay, well, thank you, Mark. Right. I appreciate all your help.
Thank you very much. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee. This is the George and Gracie Show, as one gentleman called it.
That's right.
Anyway, the phone lines are open, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or car problem, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. Been around since 1970. Once you meet Brian and Thelma, the owners, you'll understand why they're on my list, because they're good people. They're exactly the kind of people that you want to be neighbors. They're givers. They're not takers. And they are just a wonderful, wonderful, you know, husband and wife, and they're good business people. And, in fact, others from Mesa have applied to be on the best car repair shops list. And for obvious reasons, or for many reasons, they didn't make it. And some of them didn't have the necessary insurance. Some of them didn't have the necessary time and service. So to be the only shop in Mesa, that's pretty special. And so I depend on Thompson's to do a good job, and they've never let me down. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, pretty much centrally located, but Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. Okay.
What else you got on your wadded up list?
Wadded up list. A guy has a noise, and he says that when I push in the clutch, the noise goes away, and when I let go of the clutch, the noise comes back. and it's kind of a whining noise. Mm-hmm. He says, I replaced the throw-out bearing, which necessitates pulling the transmission out of the car.
Wow.
And I write him back and I say, I wish you would have called me first, because there's a difference between a screeching noise and a whining noise. The throw-out bearing causes a screeching noise when you apply the clutch. You're saying the noise goes away when you apply the clutch.
Okay.
So when you apply the clutch and you push it to the floor, you're disconnecting the moving engine and the transmission comes to a stop. All of the inner workings of the transmission comes to a stop.
Mm-hmm.
So you have completely disconnected the moving engine from the transmission. So if you push the clutch pedal in and the noise goes away, it's bad news.
Yeah.
So you've got something wrong in the transmission. You've got a bad bearing, or you've got a chipped tooth, or you've got a bushing that's completely wiped out, but the transmission has an internal problem. I could have saved him a lot with just an email, but nevertheless, he was a nice guy and he understood exactly what I said.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things. Pretty much, you know, my life is like car repair 24/7.
Yeah, I know.
All right. The bad news. Here's the bad news.
What?
It's not a happy news, but I had to recently suspend one of my shops indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, there's no bigger and better advocate for you than me when it comes to car repair. I don't have control of any shops out there, but the shops on my list have promised to adhere to a certain standard, and when they don't, and when they're obstinate, mm-hmm. and when they don't take care of business, then I do what I can to protect you. And that, in this case, has everything to do with suspended indefinitely. Hopefully they can recover.
Yep.
Hopefully they can get back on the list. But right now it ain't looking good, because this has been going on for more than 30 days.
Yep.
And there is no end in sight.
Yeah.
So it's
make sure you check the list frequently, just to make sure. This hasn't happened, what, three times in 20 years?
Yep.
Or something like that?
Yep.
So it's not like it happens every day, but you just want to keep up. And sometimes we add new people, too. So.
Well, you're right. Three times since 1988. It's mm-hmm. three times. Two shops, one right after the other, and then one just recently.
Yeah.
Another thing, too, is that we've had shops leave the list.
Sure.
And I had two people last week talk about a shop that's no longer on the list, and I'm going to that shop because you recommended them.
Yeah.
So I have to remind them that I promise that if you have a complaint with one of my shops and the process goes through the Better Business Bureau,
mm-hmm.
if the Better Business Bureau tells the shop to make a refund or give you money back and the shop says no, two things happen. Number one, the shop is immediately kicked off the list. And number two, I will give you the money up to $5,000. So I've got some skin in this game. And so in this particular case and in the shops that aren't on my list, I feel obligated to say to them, That shop's no longer on my list, so my guarantee's no longer there. If you're happy, continue to go to them.
Right.
But I want to fix that thing in your head that I support that shop with my guarantee, because I don't.
Right.
Now, they may have dropped off the shop for economical reasons,
mm-hmm.
or they may have decided to try Angie's List or something like that.
Sure.
There's a lot of other options for you to spend your marketing money.
Yeah.
So that's important. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Five lines are open. Gil's sleeping. Wake him up. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my wife, Renee, and every Saturday we're here talking about cars between 10 and noon right here on KKNT. And we've got one caller on the line, Ron, and we're going to open up the lines. They're already open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to take Ron before I bring the brought to you by. So, Ron, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Well, I've got an F-150. 2000 F-150 that's pushing about 215,000 miles, and every now and then one of my spark plugs blows out, and I understand it's a problem with F-150s and there's some kind of fix for it. Just wondering if you guys do that, if you have any recommendations of somebody that does.
Well, I'm well aware of the history of that, and the answer is it's very fixable, but here's the problem. The problem is that there has been so many fixes and so many different fixes that you have to find somebody who's tried them all and has determined this one is the one that doesn't come back and bite us. So if we blow the whole threads out, and then there is so much risk here, and the reward is so small, that the shop has to know what they're doing. I know that we do this, and I know we do it successfully, but I must admit to you that there's customers out there that might be mad at me because we didn't do it successfully. But like the rest in our industry, we had one or two options on the front side, then we had 10, and then we went to 20. And it was really a matter of looking at all of them. The process we use, it has worked for us, if not 100%, 99% of the time. The downside is that oftentimes it's one after the other after the other. But you don't benefit if you do them all at once. That's a crazy notion. So doing one, and that's one only, is the right way to go. I would have a lot of questions to ask you before I could put an estimate together, but I would imagine you're going to be in the 150 to 250 range, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that. I'm pretty sure it's an hour and a half to 2.5 hours, and we have to gain access, and then we have to pull the plug out and hopefully get it out if you've screwed it back in. And if you bring it to us with no plug in it, that saves a small step, and then we're going to very carefully put new threads, put a keeper in there, put some glue in there. We're going to make it to where it's brand new. But you have a Triton in that, then that's just a problem with those. In a certain year range, yeah. It's not on all of them. They fixed the problem later. But there was a lot of guys that were pulling heads and replacing heads. The problem is that the old heads had the same problem as the new heads. So, and then there was so many fixes. This was in every way, shape, or form, a merry-go-round that was doing 50 miles an hour. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so, what part of town do you live in?
I live up in Cave Creek.
Okay. I'd probably give Kurtz a call or Action Auto.
Yeah.
They're both up there in the north area. You might also call Air Park Auto and ask them if they've been successful in replacing the threads and the inserts on your Triton motor. A lot of guys will just tell you, honestly, I don't want to do that. The risk is so great. The reward is so small. And
but you guys do it, right?
Yes, but I'm on the other side of the world from you. I'm at Warner and I-10, so I'm in West Tempe.
I don't mind traveling, sir.
Okay.
It's good work. That's not a problem.
Yeah, I have one guy that does that, and Eddie has been with me for 28 years.
Yeah, almost and, 29.
And he's a Ford guru in this sense. From the very first Mustang to the cars today, from the old cars to the new cars, he is my go-to guy. And him and I together have determined which process we like the best. And it's my job to make sure that that process continues to bring success to us. And Eddie would be the one that would be doing the work on your car. And I can assure you, if he hasn't done 50, he's done 100 of those.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
One more question.
Sure.
I found that if I keep extra spark plugs, because I find that after a while, it's really the spark plug threads that are not working. It's not the head thread. Well, so I've already put two new spark plugs in there because the other ones would no longer seat.
Okay.
How long can I get away with that?
Well, I'm surprised that you've done it three times, to be honest with you. We don't usually see that happening. Although we've seen guys that have tried to wrap Teflon tape around the spark plug threads and put those in, or electrical tape or something like that. The problem is when it comes out, it's going to take the threads off the head and take the threads off the spark plug. And the softer is going to move more and the harder is going to move less. So I don't know that conclusion that I'm popping them out and the threads seem to be damaged on the spark plug themselves, I'm not quite sure that discussion is going to further us, but I hope it gets you without a tow bill. If you're coming that far away, I hope it gets you there without any problems. I don't want you to drive it with no spark plug in it.
No, I wouldn't do that. But I've just been using it running around town, and it's fine. And every now and then I just check tightness of it. But I just wanted to get a hold of you. I'll call and make an appointment and get it on.
Okay. Well, good. Thank you very much, Ron. Thank you. And 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
Doug is your next caller.
Doug, good morning, Doug. How are you today?
Good morning. Not too bad, thank you. My daughter's got a 08 Pontiac G6, and she says when she fills up with gas, she'll start the car up, and it'll shut right off again, and then she has to start it up again. Do you have any ideas what that would be?
I bet.
Check-ins when it comes on, it has an EVAP code, but she changed the gas cap, and that didn't do anything.
Okay. I bet she's a tank stuffer.
Overfilling it?
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to picture on the top of the gas tank, there's this kind of like a dome. And we're going to put the suck portion of the evaporative in that dome. And all we want to do is have vent. We want to vent the tank. We want to suck the fumes out of the tank and run them forward to the engine. So if she doesn't drop the nozzle or pull it after the first click, and frankly, I'm not being mean to your daughter because
I do it.
My wife is a tank stuffer too. And so was my mother. Mm-hmm. So it's just not worth that last buck or two that you're going to stuff into the tank. And so when we fill that dome up with fuel, the very first time you start it, the evaporative system wants to suck the top of the fumes out. And of course it gets a big gulp of gas. And as a result, the engine dies. So now it's in a flooded condition and she probably has to put her foot all the way to the floor to get it running. And after 4 or 5 miles, the problem goes away as we drop the level of gas down in. I'll bet you that evaporative code will go away once she gets through 2 or 3 fuel tanks and she stops stuffing the tank. I think that she'll, then that evaporative code may very well go away.
Yeah, she did say she has to put her foot down on the gas, on the pedal to
right.
get the start. So that's probably it.
Clear flood. So, I don't want you to blame this on me, Doug. I'm gonna be mad at you. And you just say, I read this somewhere in a mechanical magazine, and you start that way. But if you say, Mark Salem said that you're a tank stuffer, then, you know, your daughter could be like a black belt in karate, and I'm kind of scared of those kinds of women, so.
All right. Sounds
okay.
Good. Thank you.
You betcha. And I can't. What do you think this is? Catholic confession?
What?
You
that
raised...
I said I did it too?
Yeah.
I do. I just hate to fill up my gas tank. And if you were nice, you'd probably do it for me.
Yeah. I only have.
And then I wouldn't stuff it.
I only have 10 other cars under
no,
my responsibility.
No, you don't.
Well, all the shop cars.
Oh, you don't fill those up.
No, but it's my. What? They're going to turn around and say to me what you just said to me?
What?
That they're your cars, you fill them up.
That's right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That ain't going to work.
Okay.
All right.
So
when I'm not taking care
you're
of your car.
Not stuffing tanks. Don't worry about it.
No. And I'm not going to be filling your car up anymore. You know, I almost filled up your Camaro the other day.
Yeah.
And it was at 3/4. And I'm glad I didn't now. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960.
What else you got on your list of complaints this week?
Well, no complaints.
Oh,
IMM Auto Service is a great shop in Tempe, northeast quadrant of Tempe. And here's what's great about IMM. No matter what you have in your garage, American, domestic, Italian, Czechoslovakian, anything, IMM can work on Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Ford, Honda, Chevrolet, Ford. Who else is the big dog there? Chevrolet, Ford, and Chrysler.
Okay.
Those are the top five. They can work on those, but here's where they really shine. Volvo, Saab, Fiat, and Alfa Romeo. Anybody can do oil changes on those cars, but when the windshield wipers start flapping on a Saab, the radio changes station on you, and the gas cap blows off, you better know somebody who can work on a Saab.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody else is going to fix that unless that guy's had years and years of experience. So if you have one of those cars, keep in mind IMM, Dave, has been in business since 1972. He gives you a warranty. He has ASE Master Certified Technician. And more than anything else, here's the most important thing as far as Mark Salem's concerned. He has access to the parts for those cars.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon for us to tell him we need this part for an old Fiat, and he'll either have it in stock or tell us where to buy it.
Right.
So he's a really good source. Now, he's not going to do that for you,
mm-hmm.
but he has a good source, a good supply line of parts for the Saabs, the Volvos, the Fiat, and Alfa Romeos.
The odd cars.
All right.
Lee is your next caller. Lee.
Lee, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi there. I have a 2001 E320 Mercedes. 115,000 miles on it.
Okay.
The other day, just in a normal start, I just obviously start the car. It was in park. I pull it down, the gear shift, and step on the gas to go. And as I get just a short trip going, it the transmission did not shift. It stayed in that low gear. And I just then pulled off the side of the road, called a garage, and said, do you have any thoughts for me? He said, yeah, just pull off to the side, turn the ignition off, take the key out, wait, you know, just a little bit of time, put it back in and start it, which I did, and everything was okay.
Okay.
He said, what is... Sounds like the M is either you can pull it in, I guess, and it goes into a manual.
Yes.
Yes. And I either did that, or there's something else wrong. That it could be a just selective.
Okay. All right. All right. When that happens, resetting the entire process by pulling off, putting it in park, shut the car key off, count to 20, turn the key back on. That's a normal thing. So that suggests that we just had some confusion and you reset the entire system and started it back up. So in that case, I wouldn't necessarily worry about that. Number two, it's entirely possible you had it in manual, so it wouldn't come out of first gear. That's possible. It's not the first, you're not the first person that's done that. You're not the second, you won't be the 100th. Third, what's the name of the garage you talked to? Well, so, hold on. Don't say the name. Did you talk to Goody?
No.
Okay. I'm glad I asked you, don't say the name. The only person in this entire state that could have given you good information is Goody up in Scottsdale, who's a Mercedes-Benz guru. And I know personally that he has
1 minute.
He has told other shops how to fix problems over the phone based on a good set of symptoms. Now, he's kind of busy. It takes a while to get in there. But in your case, I would not go to him. In your case, I would continue to drive it. And if you can go 30 days without that happening again, I don't think you should spend any money. If it does happen, I think you should probably call Goody and ask him if he would take a look at your car. I know that he has fixed many, many Mercedes-Benz transmissions without rebuilding them and without removing them because there's so many other circuits on a Mercedes that controls the shift pattern. So good luck to you, Lee. But if his name is Goody, G-O-O-D-I-E. A lot of people spell it G-O-O-D-Y-S. Either way, he's a good guy. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. The lines are wide open. We've got another hour of Car Talk, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You will get in really quick because all five lines are wide open. Let me talk to you real quick about the Internet capability of buying parts. Okay, they're one of the biggest ones out there is called Rock Auto. They sell parts to people at cheap prices. I'm telling you, cheap prices. Sometimes they sell parts to you that are less than what I pay for them. But here's the deal. They don't own a single part. They don't own a warehouse. What they've done is first of all, you have to understand on automotive parts, there's the manufacturer. Then there's a distribution facility called the distributor. Then there's the jobber, who's the guy that sells it to me. And then there's me that sells it to you, the installer. So they go through all those different levels. Distributor to the warehouse. The warehouse to the jobber. The jobber to the installer. The installer to you. That's how it works. But Rock Auto doesn't have a single part that they own. What they've done is opened up relationships with different warehouses throughout the United States. So what happens is you place an order for a water pump on Rock Auto. They send a PO, to a purchase order, to the warehouse closest to you. And they say, ship Mark Salem this water pump. Now, the Rock Auto gets paid that minute for the part. That minute for the part. So the warehouse is going to box up the part and send it to you. So you're going to get your part between 1 and 3 days, and you're going to get a part that's sometimes less than what I pay for it. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to find the warehouse in Phoenix that's doing this, and I called the big dog there, and I said, hey, look, I'll give you a credit card where you can bill me for every single part, but I want Rock Auto's price because I already know you're delivering parts for Rock Auto. You are the warehouse for Arizona for Rock Auto, so I would like to get into that food chain. I would like very much to be the one. And what do you think? And he said, that's an interesting concept, but the answer is no. And I said, okay, kind of, if you will, tell me why. And he goes, well, first of all, we get the PO, and we're not dealing with you calling in and asking, do you have a water pump with this or a water pump with that? And I said, no, I call in with a part number. And I says, I can electronically attach to you, and I can say, send me 12345WP, a water pump. It'll be my responsibility. And he goes, okay. Well, he says, but I can't just box it up, slap a UPS label on it, and ship it. I have to deliver it to you. Now I have a car, and now I have a driver. And he says, and you just happen to be more than 10 miles from me. So any profit I make by just slapping a sticker on a box and sending it is gone. I said, I understand that. So he says, the answer is no. So I get into Rock Auto, and I look at the reviews, and people are saying this. They say, what you don't know is that the part itself is cheap, but then on top of that we have shipping, and on top of that we have sales tax. And I remember one particular guy said, by the time we got done with the part, plus the shipping, plus the tax, it was 7.67 cents less. So I guess it must be almost 8 cents less than I could have bought it locally. So there is a difference, but it's a slight difference. And I suggest a local relationship is much more important. There are lots of pricing issues and lots of complaints about Rock Auto, but certainly no more or less than I expected. So I don't think they're a bad place. It's just that they got their fair share of problems. Now, here's how come I'm looking into the future, and I'm going to tell you unequivocally, this process is going to crash, and I'll tell you why. Number one, you order an electrical part, and the electrical part where the connection fits into the electrical part is filled with a white like petroleum jelly. And that's to seal the connection and provide lubrication and keep the water out. When you plug in that part, it's clear you've plugged in that part because they put it inside that cavity with a gun. And so when you plug it in, it squeezes it out, and it's clear you put that part in. Now, I must tell you, I am never allowed to return an electrical part to any of my vendors if I tried it first. So what's happening today is one of the major electronic manufacturers is complaining that the return rate is more than 50%, and virtually every part that's been returned has been installed. So what's happening is people all over the United States are ordering an ignition module, ordering a distributor, ordering an alternator, ordering a body control module, and it doesn't work, doesn't fix their problem, and then they send it back. So that's going to crash. The very biggest guy out there says, we're not in this for long because we're in it to sell parts, but if 50% of them are going to be returned, and now we have to put them in a fresh box, now we have to clean them up, now we have to sell them at a discount, then that's not going to work for us, especially our margins are so small. So beware of that. Now, the Rock Auto parts are quite different than my parts, and I'll tell you why. Number one, your part is 3 days away, 2 or 3 days away. Your car is going to sit there. Number two, your part, the one you buy off the internet, doesn't have a warranty on it. It doesn't have a labor warranty on it. Mine does. Mine fails. I do the labor. I diagnose it. I replace it. It costs you nothing. If your part fails, you pay the diagnosis. You pay me to remove it. You send it back. You get a new one. It takes another 2 or 3 days for you to get the new one. Then I have to reinstall it. So you have to pay me for the diagnosis and to take it off and put it back on.
whatever profit margin you had has gone. Second of all, I have a little bit of flexibility in my warranty, and you're not going to get any flexibility from them. Mm-hmm. So if they give you a 90-day warranty, that's it. 6 months, that's it. I have a little bit of flexibility because I'm such a big volume buyer. So if I ask them to forgive you that you're 3 days over your year, most of the time mm-hmm. we can come to an agreement.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a deal where it's a two-way street. I'm not always standing there with my hand out asking. Likewise, they're not always saying to me, we give. They'll call me and say, hey, I got this car problem, and would you take a look at it? And so-and-so has it, but, you know, no one can figure it out. Would you take a look at it? I said, yes. And I know that I'm not going to charge them. And especially I'm not going to charge them if I can't find it or fix it. But if I can find it or fix it, and I know the parts warehouse is asking me to verify that this is bad, then I'm happy to help them out. Like other shops are happy to help them out. This is not just me. This is right. a lot of other shops.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of, there's a lot of negatives. You bring your car in and you bring me a part, and you've got on the internet, you went to all the YouTubes. I want to tell you something about YouTube.
That drives you crazy.
It does. You've got a YouTube that tells you how to fix your car from someone you have no idea who they are. You have no idea of their resume or their certifications. And we for enjoyment, I have actually put an internet connection in the lunchroom because the technicians go in and look at YouTube videos. We had a car the other day. The YouTube video says if your Denali doesn't blow air up your tail end when you're sitting in the seats, then this plug is bad and this is what you do and you have to buy a new body control module. That's probably true in 1% of all the cars out there.
Yeah.
Just 1%. So people will go buy a body control module, they'll cut that plug off, go get the new plug, wire it all up, and still have the same problem that they had before.
Yeah.
So when you bring me your part, and I charge you $50 to replace your part, then if that doesn't work, then I have to take your part off, give it to you, you have to send it back, they send you a new part, or I take it off and put your old part back on, and you send it back for credit. Now, more than likely, you have to pay the shipping back. You already paid shipping once, now you're going to pay shipping twice. You'll probably get all your money back, but you're still in the same spot you were, plus you're out shipping and sales tax.
Yeah, it's just, it doesn't work very
well. Well, I'm going to look into the future, and I'm going to tell folks, you mark my words, in the next 3, 4, at the most 5 years, all the manufacturers are going to back away from that new process.
Right.
They're going to back away because the volume of returns, the volume of defects, and the sophistication level and the ability of these customers to diagnose their own car. Yeah. Everybody knows that you guys are fixing your cars by trial and tribulation. Is that right?
Trial and error.
Error. Thank you. Where did I get the trial and tribulation?
I don't know.
My head's just screwed up.
The Bible, I guess.
Yeah, no, I didn't. So, trial and error. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that. The auto parts stores that sell to the public, they know that. They know absolutely sure that you're trying. Let's try the alternator. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's try the regulator. Oh, that doesn't work. Let's try a key switch. Let's try this. Let's try that. They know that. So, this whole idea of internet stuff is going to crash in the next 5 years. It's going to go away because on the front side, it looked like a good idea, but already we have one large major manufacturer that has said if things don't change, they're going to step away from this new idea.
Yeah, so it might not even be 4 or 5 years.
But well, I'm going to give myself some room.
Yeah.
But they've probably made
a bunch of money already, so maybe they probably don't care. I don't know.
You know, I know that they make on us, they're going to make between 15 and 20%.
Okay.
Okay. Then the jobber who's going to sell it to us is probably going to make another 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. And then we're probably going to make somewhere around 20 to 30%. So it's almost 50% from the warehouse, from the guy who made it.
Yeah.
50%. They're not getting the 50%. They're getting another 2 points. They're getting 2% on top of their cost, but they've been promised huge
volumes, yeah.
So they're saying 2%, it's like on Shark Tank. 2% of $1 million is a heck of a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
you know? And people look at it as 2%. Well, I don't want to do 2%. Well, 2% of $10 million is a whole lot of money, too.
You bet.
So those are the kinds of things that you've got.
Yeah.
So anyway, now, do we let people bring their parts in? We do. If they have AMSOIL. A lot of the old timers want us to put AMSOIL. We don't sell AMSOIL.
Right.
So we let them do that.
Yeah.
We also tell people you can bring your parts in one time a year, because we have some senior citizens whose son sent them apart from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get involved in that situation. We work with them to make sure they understand the risk and the reward here.
Yeah.
But so if Grandma Moses brings her part in, we're happy to, we'll let her bring her part once a year, and that's it. Yeah. When we do that, and it's a part that's going to fix a symptom, they're wrong more than 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Or even
people bring in, anything in. A lot of times it's not the correct part. So they've, like you say, they have to send it back or take it back or whatever, and it just doesn't work.
I remember one not too long ago was a windshield wiper motor.
Uh-huh.
And the windshield wiper motor was intermittent. So the technician, a seasoned technician, Ron, walked over to the car, turned on the switch, and it didn't move. So he walked over there, and he struck the window wiper motor with the wooden part of a hammer handle.
Yeah.
Like that.
Okay.
And the motor started.
Mm-hmm.
So then he turned it on and off, turning on and off, turning on and off. So then he took the harness, and he got the wipers running, and he pushed down towards 6 o'clock, and the motor would go away. And then he'd lift it up, and the motor would come back on. But left and right, it stayed on.
Okay.
So he says, well, do I have a bad connection? And did I jar that connection by striking the wiper motor with the hammer handle? So he takes it apart, and the corrosion and the green slime in there is unbelievable. He cleans it all up. He plugs it back in. He puts a little dielectric grease in there to prevent that from happening again. He calls the customer and says, I think I got it. I'm not going to put your wiper motor in. So keep it for a couple of rainstorms in case you need it.
Yeah.
But return it. Make sure you return it in the time frame they allow you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was 2 or 3 months ago.
Right. And we'll try to save money like that.
That doesn't happen all the time.
No.
But it would have been a lot cheaper if that guy would have just let us look at it at the very front side.
Yeah.
And so let our industry look at it.
Right.
All righty. 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. We've got two folks on the line. We're going to get to them in just a second. But we've got three open, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair. You've heard me talk about Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and you've heard me talk about how good of a diagnostician Bob is. Now, Ellen, his wife, runs the front counter. She runs the office. She runs the work orders. But Bob runs the shop. And I want to tell you that Bob certainly is in the top three diagnosticians that I've ever met in my life. He has the tenacity and, more important, the basic knowledge, the advanced knowledge, the equipment necessary to track down a problem. They also do oil changes and everything in between, the most sophisticated diagnostics to oil changes. So if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue in Indian School, I would strongly suggest if you don't have a car repair shop, stop by Larry Harker's Auto for an oil change and see how they treat you. But if you have a serious diagnostic problem that no one else can fix, go see Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. Let's go to the phones. Bill, you're up first. How can I help you?
Thank you for taking my call. And I want to say I'm really happy to hear you on the program. You're very, very, very good.
Thank you.
But what I have is a 2003 Envoy with 112,000 miles on it. And it was running into an intermittent at when I would stop and then take off, and it would hesitate. Excuse me. And then it would run at a fast idle for a period of time, then it would correct itself.
Okay.
Well, I took it into the dealer, and what they did was they took and they redid the fuel system. They took and cleaned the throttle body and the injectors and all that, and it seemed to fix it. It ran a lot better, and then all of a sudden it happened again where it stalled and died.
Okay.
And I started it, and it started running normal. So I took it back. And they kept it there for 2 days, and they could not get it to reoccur. So my problem is I have it at the house now. It runs fine, but there's something in there that's not right. What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, this is not typically a problem that's going to leave you stranded. How much did the service cost you that they did initially?
You know, it wasn't very much. It was like... I think it was less than $200, like $179.
Okay.
That included the diagnostic and the fuel system.
Okay. All right. I would have done it slightly different had you called me before you go. I would have said, let's clean the idle air control motor first. Let's not do any diagnosis. Let's just clean the idle air control motor. You can tell them what you're, it's happening, and you have an erratic idle and a little bit of stalling. So the idle air control motor at 12,000 miles is a really good guess. Second, then, I'd probably clean the throttle blades. What I would not do is start running fuel injection cleaner through your intake, fuel injection and cleaner through your injectors, fuel injection cleaner that cleans your tailpipe and your muffler and your catalytic converter. It cleans the wax out of your ears.
Right.
All right.
Well, I've listened to you before, and I learned the lesson not to do that.
Yeah.
I haven't been doing that.
So I'll tell you.
Clear on that.
I'll tell you what I want you to do.
And I did clean that throttle plate, I think, what you mentioned before, but I don't know about that injector motor.
That idle air control. It's called IAC. That guy is an important component because there's an air passage that comes to the idle air control. Air in, air out. In order to control your idle, instead, before we used to screw a screw and make the idle go up and down, with fuel injected motors, we open an air passageway. So if we want it to go faster, the computer says, hey, idle air control, where are you? And it goes, 6. And it says, okay, go to 6.5. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Perfect. Stay right there. This happens 3,000 times a second, by the way. So I would have cleaned up the idle air control motor, cleaned the throttle blades, but here's what I think I want you to do. I want you to pull the vacuum line off the EGR valve, and I want you to plug the vacuum line itself with a golf tee or a pencil. And then I want you to drive it for, forget the check engine light, because we're going to set a check engine light on this deal, but drive it for 2 or 3 weeks. If it doesn't die anymore, then the EGR valve is sticking open, and that's the problem. So either replace it or clean it.
Okay,
that's the reason why I'm having you go there, because your symptoms match an EGR valve that's hanging open as well. The second thing, if that doesn't do it, plug it back in. The check engine light will go off in a week or so, and then I'd have somebody pull and clean the idle air control motor. And most senior guys, if you pull the idle air control motor and you hook up your little bypass to it and you push the button and it goes, and you want it to sound like this. So you want that little motor nice and smooth in and out. On the end of the idle air control motor is a big old cone, and that's what opens and closes the air passageway. If there's carbon, or the air passageway is normally a silver dollar, and now it's the size of a dime because the carbon around it is so thick, boom, Mark hit it right on the head. So that's what I do. I'd look at the idle air control motor and I disconnect the EGR valve just for the purposes of testing. See what happens.
Well, that's great advice, Mark. I appreciate that.
Okay.
And I may call you again and ask you for some more sound effects.
That's right. I got to tell you something, Bill.
Gosh.
I get
you know,
more...
the ironic thing is it runs just fine, and it's been running fine for several weeks, and it hasn't done that very much. So you think it could be that EGR valve or that idler control motor, right?
Well, it could very well be that the idler control motor needs to learn new parameters. I'm going to give them a break on this. They could have fixed it. It's just a matter of the computer now has been looking at the number 14, and all of a sudden the number's changed to 6. So the computer's going to take time to reacclimate itself to that. So you might decide to just give it another couple of weeks.
Yeah, just drive it for
a bit. Just drive it a little bit more. They may have hit the nail on the head. All righty? All righty.
Well, I hope so, but one other thing before I lose you, Mark, is the service engine light never came on until after they fixed it. Then it hesitated and died, and then it came on. But by the time I got it back to the service center, the engine light went off. And then it evidently cleared itself, so they had no idea what they were looking at.
And I don't blame them for that at all. That's what I would have said to you as well. If the light comes on and goes back off, then usually the problem was there for a second, came back, and then went away. And it's hard for us to go in and look at history, especially on your car that's 14 years old. On the newer model cars, we have a little history available to us. We can look at fuel trim. We can look at historical data. We can see that Bill's runs on his throttle 85% of the time at 90% of the throttle, or your wife does, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it's the newer model cars, we have a little bit more leeway. Thank you, Bill. Chuck, just stay right there. Please stay
right
there, because I'm going to give you, I got to take a break here. As far as sound effects is concerned.
Yes.
It's radio is not a visual thing, so I don't get to talk to you like I'm on TV. So I have to use words to describe, like the cone on the end of the idle air control motor.
Or sounds to describe.
and I do that not to make fun, but to demonstrate my point.
Yeah.
So, you know, this might be your last show.
Oh, that's what you keep saying.
Yeah, all right. Anyway,
I'm not scared.
602-508-0960. Chuck, don't go anywhere. You'll be my first caller. I'm going to say hello. Hello, Chuck. Mm-hmm. And so anybody else, 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange is a good shop. Been around since 1968. He's at 40th Street in Washington. They're open on Saturdays 8 to 12 for your convenience. And why is that important? It's because you want to demonstrate your transmission problem to the guy who's going to work on your transmission. And that's why Saturdays are good for that. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Great shop. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and just like I promised, we're going straight to Chuck. Chuck, thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Okay, I have it's a historical question that I've been digging at me or bothering me for ever since it happened.
Okay.
I had a PT Cruiser, 2009, at about 108,000. The timing belt went bad. It, you know what type of timing it has. So, and what ended up happening was the valves were busted, the engine stopped. It did a lot of damage to the engine.
Okay.
I took it in to a repair facility, and they ended up having to rebuild the top end, milling the head and putting in new valves, getting everything put back together.
Okay, that's normal so far.
Yep. And so in the process of them doing this, they noticed that the air conditioner wasn't running well. It was a little bit, it was turning on and off, or it wasn't running real well. They checked it out. They said that it was the cooling fan, the electric cooling, the engine cooling fan. So they changed that. I get it home, right away I'm leaking oil on my drive. I then take it back to them. They say something was wrong with the milling. They had to remill it and put it back together. So originally that was like a $3,600 repair. My year now has gone into the fall, coming back, now I'm coming around back into the summer. And my air conditioning's not working. And I'm sort of a garage mechanic, so I have some of my own equipment. And so first thing I did was to check to see, just to check over the air conditioning.
Okay, we need to hurry this up a little bit. We need to kind of get to the end of this.
Okay, I opened up the low side, and the Schrader valve was bent.
Okay.
I went ahead and put gauges, vacuum, drew it down for an hour, waited for an hour, everything was fine. I replaced the Schrader valve.
Okay.
I went ahead and put back in, I was able to get in about 3-4 ounces, but it would not take anything more. It would not turn on the compressor. I took it back to the same company or the same auto shop. They said it was a high pressure valve. I said, go ahead and change it. They said it was, they said, should we change the low pressure? I said, yes. They went ahead. They noticed that there was 4 ounces in the system. They gave me credit for that. They put dye in it. Everything worked fine. They got the freon back in.
Chuck, we're 7 minutes into this, buddy. You know, what's left over? What's going on left over now? What do we need to address?
What I'm wondering, that is a very simple repair, it seems. And I'm wondering, at $860, is that a typical charge for what they did?
Well, what I heard you say was, is they did the high pressure and low pressure switch. They diagnosed it. They put Freon back in it, and they wanted eight. And they charged you $860.
Essentially, yes.
Okay. Yep. Well, first of all, you should ask for your old electric fan back. Is this a general repair shop, or is this a brake shop that does general repair, or a transmission shop that does general repair? Just give me, don't tell me who it is, but is this a established?
Right. General repair.
Okay.
Established right. General repair.
All right. Well, the fan switch, they thought that the high pressure was causing your air conditioning to shut down, so they replaced the fan, and it could have easily been the high pressure switch, but the Lord only knows. You can't and I can't go back and do that autopsy. The $865, fax me the repair bill. I need to know exactly what they said they did. But the high pressure and low pressure switch is going to evacuate the system. So once you pop those off, the 3 or 4 ounces you put in there is gone. So what? They're going to have to evacuate and recharge the system at that point. So I can't tell you with whether you were treated fair or not. And I can't tell you if that fan was needed. And I can't tell you if the low pressure and high pressure was needed because you don't have the right symptoms. And when you took that in for this catastrophic timing belt failure, and they told you that you needed air conditioning work, why didn't you say, I didn't have any air conditioning problems before I brought it to you, or why didn't you say to yourself, maybe they can fix the existing problem I have? Or the third option is if you've got your own ability to charge your system and evacuate your system, then option three is I'll handle that. So I'm unclear as to why that conversation didn't happen. I don't have a problem with my air conditioning system. Or what problem did you find with my air conditioning system? Or option three is I got my own equipment. I'll fix it myself. So that's kind of how the circle runs. It's kind of a symptom-driven relationship. And so they said to you that the high side was going crazy, and so I want to put a fan in it. If you'd asked for your old fan back, now they want to put a high-pressure switch in it. You could have put the old fan back on and said, oh, it works fine. Then you take it back to them and say, I want a refund. Because your high-pressure switch fixed it, and that controls the fan. So that's kind of how it works. Anyway, I'm out of time on this segment. Bob, Jerry, Rex, and Scott, you stay right there. We're going to do a lot quicker. You guys, I want you to tell me what kind of car we have, what kind of mileage we have, and then let's talk symptoms, and we have to have a give and take because I need to ask you questions. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 42 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. I want to tell you about Air Park Auto Service real quick. There's only one woman-owned auto repair shop that I know of, one that's been in business a very long time, one that has a great reputation, one that answers to no man. So that's kind of the criteria. There may be one out there that's a year old, but I don't know about him. But Air Park Auto is run by Nadine. They've been around since 1968. Actually, 1985, I crossed that up. They're in Scottsdale. They're on Raintree, just east of Hayden, which is just south of Bell or Frank Lloyd Wright Boulevard. They've been on my best car repair shops for years and years and years, and they're a state-of-the-art green facility. They have the latest diagnostic tools. They have great technicians, and they service almost all makes and models of vehicles and small trucks. So if you live in the North Scottsdale area, actually north of probably McCormick Parkway from 56th Street to Fountain Hills all the way up to Carefree, this is the go-to shop I would use if I were you. Let's go to the phones real quick. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you today?
I have a 1998 Buick LeSabre, 140,000 miles. And the other day while I was parked in a shopping mall, the horns went off. And I got somebody to pull the plugs out. And that's where I am.
Okay.
The horns play all the time. They just blow.
Okay. Almost always, because of the age of your car, it's the horn pad on the steering wheel. And the horn pad has different vinyl coverings and probably a different color than the steering wheel. And most of the time that when you take the horn pad off the steering wheel, you can see some where it's deformed. And what we normally do is we put it outside, the horn pad by itself, we put it outside and hook a meter to it and walk by it every once in a while. And the meter will tell us if the horn contacts are closed or open. Now, if you have it stuck, then there could also be a relay in that system, and that will tell you where your owner's manual in the fuse panel page, it'll tell you where that relay's at. So you could have a stuck relay, or you could have a bad horn pad, but this is very, very fixable. It might be a little difficult to diagnose, but it's very fixable. I think your shop would probably check first for a relay, and if that's the case, they would replace the relay. they would also show you where the relay's at, so if the horn sticks again, you just open the hood and pull the relay out. Then they would know it's the horn pad, because it's only going to be one of two things. It's certainly not going to be the horns. It's going to be the horn relay or the pad that sits in the center of your steering wheel. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much for that. And if you have a question about what shop that you might want to go to, if you don't already have one, then just go to MarkSalem.com. Jerry, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I've got a 2010 Dodge pickup. It's a 4.7 motor in it.
Okay.
And it uses a 520 oil.
Okay.
Now, if I get into a pinch, can I dump a quart of 530 in there? Does that make a world of difference?
I'm going to change your question.
Okay.
Mark, have you ever had a car with 540 in it or 1540 in it? Or of all the internal combustion motors you've had, do you sometimes change the weight? And the answer is double heck yes. You know, just the other day I
thought he said you just put one quart in, though. He mixed it. Okay.
The mixing is fine.
Yeah.
I was on the John Deere tractor up at the cabin.
Yeah.
And I was mowing your 14 acres that you have.
Sure.
And the oil says right on the top 530. Yeah. And all I had was 2050.
Okay.
And I was quart low. I just dumped it in there.
Okay.
I know it's going to be fine. There's going to be some people that argue with me, but my intention was is I'll change the oil at the end of the summer. I don't really care. I know the oil is going to work fine. It's not going to turn. It's not like putting ice cream with peanut butter or anything like that at all. It's going to be fine. In your case, if you want to add a quart of 530 to your 520, I wouldn't care about that. And if you wanted to take my kids to Disneyland, I'd still let you take them. Okay?
Okay. Great. I have one question related to the oil.
Okay.
Some of these oils with like a 0.20, when you go pull that damn dipstick out, it's hard to see the oil on it.
Yes.
Would there be a problem if you put a little tiny pinhole with a drill up high on where the spill line is so that, you know, the oil would still hang in that spill, that little line to see if you would. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that's a great idea. As a matter of fact, most dipsticks have a hole in the ad and on the full mark, but I think that's a great idea. Just drill a small hole, and you're going to be able to look through the hole to see if the oil levels is below it. It'll look straight through, and if it's above it, you're going to not be able to see through it. So I think that's a great idea. So
okay.
I say yes. All right. Thank you very much, Jerry.
All right.
You betcha. Scott, you're up next. Scott, how can I help you today?
Yeah, great. Great show you have here. I've got electrical question, the worst enemy of mine in the whole world.
Okay.
Anyway, we have a 98 Dodge Dakota with the V6 and the standard transmission. My son tried to put a ham radio in it, and he ran hot and cold off of the power block where the relays are out there.
Uh-huh.
It blew the negative side of the radio and took out the brake lights, and we're thinking possibly the motor for the AC unit. He's never had flashers. We bought the new block for that. It don't work now either way with a new one or an old one. We've checked all the fuses in the whole system that we can find to check, and they're all good.
Okay.
The relays, we've tried to go from the crooked one to the straight one with the ohm meter, and we get a buzz, so apparently we're getting juiced through them, but I don't know how to test them any further. I'm stuck. I can't get brake lights or a fan motor going again.
Well, I can't tell you how many times, and I'm not laughing at you. Don't misunderstand me. I can't tell you how many times we checked all the fuses, and I like what you said, all we could find. Because all the circuits you talk about are on a fuse. Now, the only other possibility is that the power supply to the fuse block is defective. And if you go upstream from that, I'm sure your wiring diagram is going to say that you've got some fuse links probably down at the starter. And a fuse link is a piece of wire that will burn if we get a direct short. And you oftentimes will only see a small burn mark on that piece of wire. But if you pull on the wire, the insulation stretches, but the wire inside is burnt. So you pull on it, it's kind of like, it's kind of a spongy feeling. So if you blow a fuse link down at the starter, then I would fix that first, and you know what I'd do is I'd strip back the installation, and I'd take those two wires and just wind them together with the battery disconnected, and then I'd hook the negative cable back up, and if we smoke that connection again, you still have a problem, and if we don't, then I'd check to see if the blower motor and all that other stuff works, and if it does, boom, Mark hit it on the I also want to tell you this. To diagnose this on a 1 to 10 scale from a technician level kind of guy that I am and many other guys in this town are, this is something that's going to, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 or a 4. Because we all know how the system works. And we all have access to wiring diagrams. So we're going to look at the common power supply to the radio. Da, 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 da. We're going to go backwards. We're going to go past the fuses. Oh, look at all of these. The power supply for all of these circuits starts here. And then you go down, you tug on the wire, boom, the fuse link is bad. And we go from there. So if you have to ask for help, this isn't going to cost you an arm and a leg. All righty?
Okay, very good.
All right.
So it's in the wire to the starter. That's where I'm looking. I'll go down there.
Yeah, the positive cable goes to the 12 o'clock position on the starter solenoid. There's going to be some other wires that come off of that same lug, that same threaded stud. Those wires are smaller than the positive cable, and those are the ones you're going to go back about 6 inches away from the starter, and you're going to gently tug away from the starter. If the wire goes, yeah, 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 where you're stretching it out an inch and coming back, that's the broken fuse link.
I gotcha. Okay.
And tell
really
your son that
the
next time he puts in a ham radio, he clearly hooked up a ground to the power supply. He clearly did that.
Well, he should have went straight to the battery, but he saw the hot and the cold side on that relay box up there, and he said, well, one side's got to be hot, one side's got to be cold. But I think they're both hot.
They are both hot.
I don't know.
No, they're both hot.
Yeah.
He could have used a digital voltometer to check those two and found that they were both hot, and he could have saved you and me a lot of time and trouble. So, anyway.
Good. Okay.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Jim, hang on for 15 to 20 seconds. I want to tell you about Kurtz Automotive. He's at I-17 in Bell. He's been around since 1987. He has Jeff, that's the service manager, that's an ASE master technician, and the guy, the lead tech in his shop, is Eric, who's an ASE master certified technician. And here's why that's important. You got two young bucks that really know their stuff. And when your car comes in and you've got a difficult problem, it's not uncommon for both of them to put their heads together. So it's not a situation where you charge two times the labor rate. It's that those two guys can figure it out in a half an hour where somebody else may take an hour. So they're going to bill you for half an hour. Kurtz Automotive, I-17 in Bell, great place, a place that's been on our list, and I'm proud to have him on our list. Jim, go ahead, sir. What can I do for you?
Mark, I've got a 02 Chevy Cavalier. It's got about 80,000 miles on it. I got several miscellaneous questions and sort of towards the end of the show.
Sure.
So my main issue right now is the RPM surges when the air conditioning is on. If I put the car in neutral, it stops. The surging stops. But as long as it's in gear, whether I'm driving or whether I'm just idling, it continues to surge.
All right, let's stop there. I want you to pop the hood, have your wife get in the car and hold her foot on the brake and put it in drive. I want you to look at the fan belt area of your car, and I want you to look at the front of the air compressor, and I want to know if the front of the air compressor is going on and off. Otherwise, it will become stationary where it's not spinning with the belt. Then all of a sudden there'll be a click, and then it will start spinning with the pulley in the belt. If you see that cycling of the AC compressor, then you need to have your air conditioning serviced because the low pressure switch is cycling the air conditioning. This is why it's not doing it when you throw it into neutral. You gain about 100 RPMs at that particular point, plus you're not loading the air conditioning system. So more than likely, this is a low refrigerant level concern, and that would be the very first thing I would check.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
And one other quick thing, if you have a moment.
I do.
Tires, when you rotate tires, I assume that it used to be that we cross-rotated. I'm an old fella, and I don't drive much anymore. I just drive maybe 3,000 miles a year in town here. So these are old questions, but do you rotate on the same side, or do you still cross-rotate?
That's a really great question. You're going to get 50-50 of the guys that do it, and I'll tell you what I do. I cross the fronts and bring the back straight up, and I'll tell you why. The tire that gets worn the fastest and the worst is the left front, because that's the tire that has the weight of the motor. So does the right front, but it's also the got the driver's butt in the seat. So the driver's front is the one that carries the biggest load all the time, because there is no, if there is no driver, there's no load and the car ain't moving. So I want, and then the one that wears the least is the right rear. So I want to cross the fronts and move them back, and I want to bring the backs forward. Now, there's you can crisscross backs and front if that's what you want. Here's the issue. Some of the guys will say, wait a minute, Mark, when you take the left front off and move it on the right rear, you're changing the direction of rotation. Unless the tire has an arrow and it says this is the direction of rotation, or otherwise it's a directional tire, then you can change the spinning direction of a steel radial tire. You can. It's always been okay, and it's okay today. So you can change the directions, and when you cross them, you are, in fact, changing the rotation. Now, if the tire has a little bit of feathering on it, and I don't want to do an alignment, or they won't let me do an alignment, then I'll take that feathering one, and I will change the direction of rotation, because that's going to help with the feathering. So, yes, okay. You can cross the front.
So if feathering is not an issue, then you'd cross the front and then move the rear to the front.
Yes, you straight ahead.
Cross the front first.
Yeah, cross the front, and the rears go straight forward. You have the opportunity to describe what you want at the repair shop. You can tell them this is what I want them to do. There's nothing against industry standards that I've just shared with you. Now, unless the tires are directional, and I can guarantee you that your O2 Cavalier doesn't have directional tires. BMWs and Mercedes do, and real expensive cars, the Lexus, the Infiniti line, they're likely to have directional tires. Your Cavalier doesn't.
All right, excellent. And if I'm driving this car with this thing cycling or surging, is that doing any damage to anything?
No, not really. I bet your air conditioning is slightly substandard.
Oh, it seems to be putting out pretty cold stuff. So
all right.
Cold air, but
I want to tell you something. What you're asking here is something that any good shop will stand out, walk out in the parking lot and listen. Part of that up and down, I'm wondering if there's a click that goes along with that noise. Because the compressor going, engaging and disengaging, typically there's a click that goes along with that. So if you were to have your wife get in there, put her foot on the brake and put it in gear, and you're outside and you hear the click underneath the hood, then I've hit the nail on the head. But I want to tell you, almost every good shop I know, if you pulled in, whether you're my customer or not, and you said, would you listen to this noise? We are so grateful that you let us listen to the noise before you bring it in. So yes, we'll walk out, lift the hood. We will tell you more than likely what the noise is and what the expected repair would be. I think that would be something you could count on. Thank you very
much,
Jim.
Thank you so
much. You betcha. My email address for those of you that didn't get in is mark@marksalem.com, and my website is marksalem.com. We have some wonderful FAQs on our websites. This is gathered over the last, 1988 is when I started in radio. We started the FAQs shortly after that because these were the most common questions that people ask me. So I put them on the website with my answer. So if you go to marksalem.com, there's a list of repair shops plus all of our FAQs. Please wear your seatbelt. Please drive safely. And if somebody does something nice, wave to them and tell them thanks.